started, man.
Yeah,
I can dig it.
Stop. Right on.
Brother, there's far too many of you dying. You know.
And good morning, Wisconsin. It's 6 minutes after 8 o'clock now on this Friday morning. It's a Friday, baby. Hey, it's the 19th of May, and welcome to the Earl Ingram Show. I'm Stu Daniels, filling in again today for Earl. He'll be back on Monday, taking a few days off. And thank you for tuning in to your local civic media radio station. And if you want to join in the conversation today, feel free. The phone number here is 844-967-2789. And we have quite a few things to talk about today. In addition to all of the important things like political stuff, we're also going to try to have a little fun during the third hour today and talk about some things that aren't as important, but maybe a lot of fun. Okay, so stick around and let me take a look at the headlines right here, see what's going on today. I'll give you a few of these headlines. It says the Disney Corporation has canceled plans for a $1 billion campus in Florida following the attack on the entertainment company by Governor DeSantis. Ukrainian President Zelensky will make an appearance in person at the G7 summit that's going on now in Japan. And a congressman from Ohio, Jim Jordan, lost his cool when he had to be reminded of House committee rules during one of his weaponization hearings yesterday. Christian Amanpour of CNN criticized the news network for holding a town hall with the twice impeached and recently indicted former president, Donald Trump. And tonight, the final tour of Dead & Company begins in Los Angeles. Dead & Company is the most recent incarnation of the Grateful Dead, with Bob Weir and Mickey Hart from that band that started way back in 1965, plus guitarist John Mayer, who's been in the band since this formation, this incarnation, got together back in 2015. They won't be stopping in Wisconsin on this tour, but they will be playing Wrigley Field in Chicago for two nights next month in June. And before we go a little bit more in depth on those headlines and other stories, I want to give you a look back at what's happened on this day in history, the 19th day of May. It was back in 1994, former First Lady Jacqueline Kennedy Onassis passed away at the age of 64. In 1992, on this date, Vice President Dan Quayle criticized the CBS sitcom Murphy Brown for having its title character decide to bear a child out of wedlock. In 1974, Erno Rubik designed the puzzle that would later become known as the Rubik's Cube. In 1967, United States planes bombed Hanoi, the capital of Vietnam, for the first time in the Vietnam War. And I don't know if you've ever seen this film. I guess if you're of a certain age, you've probably seen it. But in 1962, on this date, actress Marilyn Monroe, that's Marilyn Monroe, sang a very sexy version of Happy Birthday to President John Kennedy at Madison Square Garden. I think it was a benefit there. And that was just 3 months before she passed away. And, of course, there's always been speculation that she was involved with John Kennedy, and not only him, but his brother Robert as well. So who knows? It may just be speculation. But you never know, right? And one more thing on this date in 1884, the Ringling Brothers opened a small circus in Baraboo, Wisconsin. And born on this date, 1992, singer-songwriter Lainey Wilson, Baskin, Louisiana. In 1976, NBA star Kevin Garnett was born. Back in 1959, Nicole Brown Simpson, ex-wife of O.J. Simpson. And, of course, she was murdered in 1994. In 1951, on this date, Joey Ramone was born. 1949, Dusty Hill, former bass player for ZZ Top. He was born in Dallas, Texas on this date. And I think he passed away, what, about 3 years ago or so now? But 1948, it was singer Grace Jones. You remember her? Had some big hits back in what, the 1980s. And in 1948, born on this date, May 19th, a man whose name you may not recognize, but I can guarantee you've heard him play. I'm talking about saxophonist Tom Scott, a great horn player who was on dozens of hit singles and hit albums by a wide variety of artists, including the Beach Boys, the Blues Brothers, Joni Mitchell, Pink Floyd, Steely Dan, the Grateful Dead, George Harrison, and many, many others. Tom Scott, born on this date in 1948. In 1946, professional wrestler Andre the Giant. I think that's one of Earl's favorites. Andre the Giant, born in 1946 on this date. In 1945, Pete Townsend of The Who was born. And in 1925, Omaha, Nebraska, civil rights leader, activist, Malcolm X was born on this date in 1925. And as far as sports, the Brewers were off yesterday. They start a series with the super hot Tampa Bay Rays this evening at Tropicana Field in St. Petersburg. And I want to talk about something that's going on in Wisconsin. There evidently is some kind of a rift among the Republicans in the State House right now. This is a story from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, Molly Beck and Allison Deer. And the headline says, Republican rift over referendum requirement puts municipal funding bill in jeopardy. And that's something we discussed a couple times this week, the municipal funding bill, the shared revenue plan where taxes are collected, they go to the Capitol, and then the money is dished out to the communities around the state. And Dateline Madison, it says a sweeping piece of legislation aimed at boosting state funding for local governments across the state could be in jeopardy after the state Senate's leader said his caucus won't support a provision that would require Milwaukee officials to get approval from voters before raising sales taxes, a move that Assembly Speaker Robin Voss said could kill the bill that his caucus has already passed. Voss said Wednesday his caucus was done negotiating on the bill Assembly Republicans passed Wednesday night, even though Governor Tony Evers said he wanted to continue to discuss with the legislature's two GOP leaders. A key provision, Voss said, he did not want to amend requiring a referendum before hiking sales taxes in Milwaukee, but Senate Majority Leader Devin LeMahieu told reporters yesterday, his caucus would likely not include that measure in a bill they pass, a move Milwaukee officials and Evers would support. Voss said that could kill the bill. And LeMahieu said instead of a referendum, Senate Republicans would likely back a provision that requires a vote of the Milwaukee governing boards, but did not specify whether the vote would be required to be unanimous. Here's the quote. He said, it likely won't include a referendum vote because I think that would not fix the problems, in my view, because I think a referendum vote would fail. Right? People often vote against referendums, even though they would benefit from the referendum if it passed. And the reason why, of course, is because a lot of people just say, I don't want to pay any more taxes. But LeMahieu goes on and says, so I think the way to do it is through a vote by the Common Council and the county board, end quote. A spokeswoman for Voss said the assembly would not agree to take up a new bill. Quote, that could unfortunately kill the bill and all of our good work, Voss told the Journal Sentinel. requiring voter approval for enacting a new tax, which was included in the original Evers proposal, should not be all that controversial, end quote. LeMahieu said, quote, it's unfortunate that he's drawing a line in the sand now with his version of the bill and stopping negotiations on the bill that not everybody's in agreement on. You know, there are two houses in the state legislature. We're going to do our due diligence, make sure we have a bill that at least all the stakeholders can get behind. And if the assembly at some point refuses to take up that bill, a bill that was going to make generational changes to townships, counties, municipalities around the state, he's going to have to answer to his caucus. Laying down the line. LeMahieu said he and Evers met with Voss earlier this week to hash out details of the bill, but Voss did not indicate he would stop negotiations. And here's a quote. I know he wanted a final bill, and we talked about if there were still negotiations to be done, that we would make some changes in the Senate and send it back to him. But I had no idea that a line was going to be drawn in the sand yesterday afternoon, LeMahieu said. Evers said Thursday afternoon yesterday he agrees with LeMahieu's approach after initially proposing to allow Milwaukee County to impose an additional 1% sales tax if approved by voters through a referendum. Quote, given Milwaukee's urgent financial needs, a referendum is likely untenable based on other restrictions on local control included in the bill as introduced. Britt Cutterback, spokeswoman for Evers, said in a statement released on Twitter. Cutterback said the governor supports requiring local officials to sign off on a sales tax increase as LeMahieu has proposed. Quote, Governor Evers appreciates the majority leader LeMahieu's willingness to keep working together and looks forward to continuing negotiations toward making significant investments in local communities across our state, Cutterback said. Assembly Republicans on Wednesday released revisions to the bill that boosts state funding known as shared revenue and implements policy changes in communities across the state on policing, public health, quarries, and more. The revisions were made just before lawmakers met on the assembly floor to pass the legislation 56 to 36. All right, going to take a quick break. It's a short one. Everybody stick around. You're tuned in to the Earl Ingram Show. Yes, everybody get down and do some boogieing, right? 21 minutes after 8 o'clock now, Friday morning. Hope you're having a good day so far. Thanks for tuning in to the Earl Ingram Show. I'm Stu Daniels filling in for Earl today. He'll be back on Monday. And just before the break, we were discussing the budget, shared revenue plan for Wisconsin, which seemed to be moving forward, but now because of an issue between the Republican-led Senate and the Republican-led Assembly, it doesn't look like it's moving forward at this time. And it mainly has to do with how Milwaukee would fund, how Milwaukee would get a chance to raise taxes, both the city government and the county government. And I was reading from this story from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, and I left off here where Evers said on Wednesday morning that he was optimistic about finding a compromise supported by both houses of the legislature, stakeholders, and his office. But by the end of the day, Voss said discussions were over even as Evers spokeswoman said the governor was looking forward to continuing the discussions. As written, the legislation would allow the city of Milwaukee to levy a 2% sales tax, while Milwaukee County could add a 0.375% sales tax on top of its current 0.5% tax if voters approve. All Assembly Democrats opposed the legislation, and three Republicans joined them. GOP representatives Scott Allen of Waukesha, Janelle Branchen of Menominee Falls, and Chuck Wickers of Muskego joined Democrats to vote against the bill. Milwaukee and Milwaukee County leaders have raised concerns that voters would not approve new sales taxes to fund the city's and county's pensions. If not approved, Wisconsin's two largest local governments would confront massive cuts to services. In a statement on Thursday, Common Council President Jose G. Perez called the Assembly's passage, quote, an important moment in the legislature's path to finding a better way to provide much-needed funding for local governments across Wisconsin, end quote. However, he said he did not see that move as the end of the process. We appreciate the efforts the Assembly has made thus far, but as with any negotiation, I am optimistic that we will see additional improvements. I look forward to moving on to the next phase and achieving an even better outcome for our great city, which has the state's most diverse population and is the economic engine of Wisconsin, he said. And Milwaukee Mayor Cavalier Johnson on Thursday said he would prefer that the county board and Common Council be empowered to approve local sales taxes as opposed to putting the question to voters. He said allowing for the local governments to approve the taxes removes the most uncertainty, as both local governments face the prospect of significant cuts without additional revenue. Johnson anticipated the Assembly and Senate would come to a compromise. Well, you would hope so, right? And do you have an opinion on this issue? If you do, feel free to give us a call. 844-967-2789 is the phone number. I'd be interested to hear what you have to say concerning that. If you were following along, you know, it seems like the big issue is, do you want voters to vote on these tax increases for Milwaukee and Milwaukee County, or should the local governing body be able to do that, since they probably have a better understanding of the dire need that both of those governments are facing at this time? And before we get to our next break here, I want to go over something I saw that kind of surprised me. I really wasn't aware this was going on. You know, I guess you could say that when it comes to guns and the gun issue, it seems like the people who are looking for the most loose gun rules, gun regulations, are people on the right, generally speaking, right? And that, generally speaking, people on the left would like to see a little more gun safety regulation. Well, there's a little twist to this going on now. I saw this story in Rolling Stone. The headline says, anti-fascist, armed to the teeth. The far right brings guns to drag shows. Now, the left is showing up with weapons, too. And this was posted yesterday, May 18th. It says, the young white nationalist across the street from the drag show starts to panic. He and his friend, two white men, probably in their early 20s, with baseball hats and faces masked by the kind of stretchy gaiters middle-aged guys wear on fishing boats, holds a big sign with bold black letters saying, pedophiles get the rope. But their expressions change as they're suddenly surrounded by figures dressed in all black with combat boots, military helmets, balaclavas, body armor, and tinted goggles, their gloved hands balled into fists. It's a Monday afternoon in Fort Worth, Texas, and the group in all black are mostly members of the Elm Fork chapter of the John Brown Gun Club, a left-wing anti-fascist organization created to level the playing field with right-wing militias that show up armed to protests around the country. Yeah, I had no idea this is even going on, but we'll get back to this story after this break. It's the bottom of the hour break. Stick around if you want to join the conversation, 844-967-2789. You're tuned in to your local media, local civic media radio station. Welcome back to the show, folks. You are tuned in to the Earl Ingram Show. I'm Stu Daniels filling in for Earl today. Earl will be back on Monday. Music from the Grateful Dead on a Friday morning. We mentioned earlier that they, or at least what's left of them, Dead and Company with John Mayer now on guitar, going to be starting their final tour tonight. They said that's it for Dead and Company, but they will have fun, I'm sure. In fact, every show on this tour will be available to watch, you know, over your device or your TV, if you have a smart TV, whatever. Interesting that there are, you know, so many people into that band still to this day that they can support pay-per-view for every show on the tour, or streaming, as they call it nowadays, right? Hey, just before the break, I was getting to this story from Rolling Stone. And if you have an opinion on this or anything else we discussed today, feel free to call 844-967-2789. And also, if you want to send me an email message, you can do that. My email address is stumanradio@gmail.com. Stu is spelled S-T-U. And I was surprised to see this story last night from Rolling Stone. I didn't know this was going on, but just before the break, I started it. The headline is "Anti-Fascist, Armed to the Teeth. The far right brings guns to drag shows. Now the left is showing up with weapons, too." This is by Jack Crosby, posted yesterday. It says, "The young white nationalist across the street from the drag show starts to panic. He and his friend, two white men probably in their early 20s with baseball hats and faces masked by the kind of stretchy gaiters middle-aged guys wear on fishing boats, hold a big sign with bold black letters that says, 'Pedophiles, get the rope.' But their expressions change as they're suddenly surrounded by figures dressed in all black with combat boots, military helmets, balaclavas, body armor, and tinted goggles, their gloved hands balled into fists. It's a Monday morning in Fort Worth, Texas, and the group in all black are mostly members of the Elm Fork chapter of the John Brown Gun Club, a left-wing anti-fascist organization created to level the playing field with right-wing militias that show up armed to protests around the country." Now, I've heard people on television say that we are in the midst of a Cold War, a cold civil war, that people are so divided right now, this nation is so divided, that we may not be fighting in the streets against each other, but there is a Cold War going on where people seem to be dividing and moving toward their sides. And that may be true, especially when you read about things like this. I'll continue a little bit before we get to the phones. It says the black-clad figures are up in the white nationalist's face. He shouts, they shout. Suddenly, the white nationalist's mirrored sunglasses fly off his head in a glittering arc, landing in the middle of the street. "That's assault," the white nationalist shrieks, backing away. His hand fumbles under his shirt. I notice for the first time the outline of a compact pistol in a concealed holster in the front of his waistband. Quote, "Get your hand off your gun," Someone from the Elk Fork crew shouts. I slide a few steps to my left out of the line of fire. The white nationalist backs up as he screams slurs. Hand still on his gun, the Elm Fork crew's rifles are back in their cars. I look around to see if anyone else from the growing crowd of protesters is reaching for weapons. In the parking lot nearby, there's someone in black on a motorcycle wearing crisscrossed bandoliers of shotgun shells across their chest and a gun strapped to their saddle. There's another guy in a bucket hat with a sign that reads, "Kink and kids don't mix." A far-right live streamer. And about half a dozen young men from the New Columbia Movement, a far-right Christian nationalist group. Now, this sounds like a powder keg, if you ask me. The story from Rolling Stone goes on and says, across the street, a long line of people wait to enter the drag show inside the music venue Tulips FTW. In spite of the tension building all around them, they cheer, dance, and blow soap bubbles into the air. The event is a weekly all-ages trivia night hosted by a drag queen named Salem Moon. It's clear the staff has been through this chaos before. Two bouncers wearing black t-shirts that say "Welcome Home" pat down each attendee and check every bag. If you're looking for the front line in America's sprawling culture war, this is it. For the past year, the conservative movement has zeroed in on the LGBTQ community, specifically targeting trans people and drag queens who they claim groom children into a life of abuse and sin. This accusation has no statistical basis or grounds in reality, but what it does have is the ability to make people really, really mad. And for the worst elements of the far right, that's an opportunity. Some white nationalists and virulent evangelicals have seized upon trans panic to mobilize new recruits, bolstered by the issues embraced by mainstream politicians like Florida Governor Ron DeSantis. And where the far right goes, so do their guns. Militias, gangs, and other groups have been open carrying firearms at public protests, showing up to drag events and government buildings toting weapons of war. Last year, the New York Times analyzed more than 700 armed demonstrations across the country and found that the right wing was responsible for bringing heat to 77% of them, protesting everything from LGBTQ rights to Joe Biden's victory in the 2020 election. But the far right aren't the only ones showing up armed across the country. Marginalized individuals are forming groups like the John Brown Gun Club and Socialist Rifle Association that claim to be devoted to the idea of community defense. Their rationale is informed by the massacres at Colorado's Club Q and Florida's Pulse nightclub, and tempered by a long cultural distrust of the police, who they say have repeatedly failed to protect them from, and in some cases even perpetuated, right-wing hate. Many sources interviewed for this story, particularly those who conceal their identities at protests, asked to use pseudonyms in fear of being targeted or doxxed by the far right. Others were happy to share their names, judging that their public presence or concealed carry permits shield them from harm. All of them, however, agree on one thing. The other side has guns and is willing to use them. The only answer is to be prepared to shoot back. Quote, "We are a response," one JBGC member says. That's John Brown Gun Club. "We exist as a response to violence." On Monday, Jason, the owner of Tulips FTW, met with the Elm Fork JBGC before the protesters showed up and asked them to leave their rifles in their cars. Quote, "Weapons beget weapons," he told them. "We do not want things to get ugly." And the presence of guns at a protest or counter-protest is a clear escalation of force. Quote, if you bring weapons, you're gearing up for a fight. End quote. As Jason puts it, having armed groups on both sides raises the deadly possibility of a shootout and puts the more militant gun clubs in the rare position for those on the left of matching the violent tactics of the far right. Now, I ask you, listener, is that a good idea? Is that what we should be doing? The story from Rolling Stone goes on and says, at the drag trivia hour, fortunately, things don't get ugly. Various elements of the far right had mobilized on the messaging app Telegram to protest the event. The John Brown Gun Club members tell me, but rainstorms and a miscommunication about the start time have kept turnout low. Inside Tulips, the event goes on to a packed house. Quote, it's eye-opening to see the lengths that people are going to shut us down. Show host Salem Moon tells me before going backstage to change into her outfit for the night. The fact that we're getting to a place where we're pushed into a corner and have to defend ourselves physically, I didn't think we'd ever get here, but here we are. Elm Fork and most John Brown Gun Club chapters I speak to usually attend protests or events when they're invited by an organizer or contact within the community, though they do sometimes show up unannounced at events where they know there will be significant right-wing presence. Now, how long you think it's going to be before one of these right-wing folks gets too upset and starts shooting at the left-wing guys? Hopefully it won't happen, but It definitely increases the possibilities. The story from Rolling Stone goes on and says, they're not paid for their work, though each operation is carefully planned by a designated anchor who takes responsibility for speaking to business owners and organizers, as well as more detailed tactical work like making maps of entrance and exit points of event locations and compiling detailed dossiers on expected right-wing presence and other actors. When I approach Tulips on Monday afternoon, I'm immediately recognized, quote, your mustache was a bit heavier in the photo, a person in black says. I, too, made that day's dossier. In my months interviewing these groups, it was sometimes surreal to hear them talk without a hint of irony about intelligence dossiers, tactical maps, and weapons loadouts on a weekday afternoon in a major American city. How we got here is a complicated story. Marginalized groups in the United States have turned to firearms in order to defend their own communities from hostile actors for decades. In the mid-1960s, the Black Panther Party practiced cop watching or sending armed members to tail the police and stand by with weapons drawn when they made an arrest. But as the Democratic Party and liberal-leaning politics coalesced around gun control, the right built up the image that they had a cultural monopoly on violence. That didn't mean left-wing gun groups or apolitical community defense initiatives ceased to exist, but they were shuffled even further outside the bounds of acceptable politics for progressive-leaning Americans who have for decades emphasized research showing that guns in homes drastically increases the rate of suicides, death of minors, and even the likelihood of being fatally assaulted. For the people in these groups, however, the risks are worth it to defend themselves. The John Brown Gun Clubs operate independently, but share a similar ethos. Direct action to counter the threat of the far right, and their members are dedicated to anti-fascism, anti-racism, and anti-bigotry. Most groups I spoke to emphasize that showing up armed is only part of their work, mentioning supply drives for unhoused people during Texas's deep freezes and other mutual aid events. Quote, the gun stuff doesn't exist without all this other stuff, says one John Brown Gun Club member who goes by the name Accountant. Quote, if we're going to be carrying guns, There has to be a community reason for it, end quote. There's a little more to this story. I'll get to it after the break. We're going to take a quick break. It's a short one. Stick around. If you have something you want to add to the conversation, feel free. Number is 844-967-2789. I'm Stu Daniels, filling in for Earl today. It's the Earl Ingram Show on your local Civic Media radio station. Oh yeah, welcome back to the show, everybody. It's the Earl Ingram Show on a Friday morning. I'm Stu Daniels, filling in for Earl today, and he'll be back on Monday. I hope you're having a good day today, and thank you for tuning in to your local Civic Media radio station. Just before the break, we were discussing this face-off between right-wing and left-wing armed groups at protests. We'll get back to that in just a minute. I want to mention, if you want to join the conversation, feel free. 844-967-2789 is the phone number. And if you want to send me an email message, you can do that. StuManRadio@gmail.com is the email address. Before I continue with this Rolling Stone story, I just want to mention that stick around during the third hour today. We're going to try to lighten things up a little bit, talk about some fun things as opposed to all of the dire news that's going on these days, but trying to keep you abreast of what's going on because there's a boatload of the stuff going on these days. Let's go to the phones and see what Judith from Milwaukee has to say. Good morning, Judith. How are you today? Thank you for calling.
Oh, good morning. It's good to talk to you. I'm concerned about Milwaukee. They keep saying that it's the engine of the state. And what I want to know is we're supposed to be supporting the whole state, and yet I'll tell you in the news of Milwaukee that I see, the one of our fire stations has been closed. Now they're talking about closing a police station. Our roads are crumbling. And I would like to know what every city in this state is contributing to the state. There must be statistics somewhere that would tell you that. Because I think Milwaukee is tired of supporting the whole state.
Yeah. Well, thank you for mentioning that. Now, how do you think we should go about raising the revenue needed to fix these issues? Do you feel that a sales tax is the way to go? It sounds like the way this bill is set up, that Milwaukee could possibly add a two percentage points or 2% to the sales tax. Do you think that's the best way to go? Or how do you, it sounds like you might be more inclined. Go ahead.
I mean, did you finish? I'm sorry.
Yeah, I was just saying that you might be more inclined to think that the money should just come from the state rather than having to raise a sales tax that the people of Milwaukee would mostly be paying for.
Yeah, Milwaukee is tired of it, I think. In my opinion, I haven't done any, you know, gathering of information that way. But so many people, you know, the suburbs and outside the state and so forth, they all come to Milwaukee to work, and yet they don't contribute much to this state. And I think that the money keeps flowing out, and then we have nothing to work with ourselves to keep everything going.
Yeah. All right. Judith, thank you for calling in today. All right. Hey, let's get back to this story here. This is from Rolling Stone. And by the way, if you want to call in, feel free, 844-967-2789. The story from Rolling Stone that we've been discussing has not only right-wing, but left-wing groups showing up armed at protests. And is that where we want to be in the United States in 2023? You know, if you would have told me 10 years ago that this was going to be going on now, I would have said no way. But This story from Rolling Stone continues and says, openly leftist pro-gun organizations like Redneck Revolt, Socialist Rifle Association, and the John Brown Gun Clubs have existed in various forms for close to two decades. The first John Brown Gun Club was founded in the early aughts in Lawrence, Kansas, where members advocated for community defense and firearm knowledge, naming their group after the infamous abolitionist John Brown, who led an 1859 revolt against slavery that targeted the federal armory in Harper's Ferry, Virginia, with the intent of arming escaped and rebelling enslaved people with guns to fight for their own freedom. In 2019, the John Brown Gun Club made headlines when 69-year-old Willem Van Spronson, a senior member of the Puget Sound chapter, attacked an Immigration and Customs Enforcement facility in Tacoma, Washington. Van Spronson infiltrated the property with a semi-automatic rifle and several Molotov cocktails before being shot and killed by police. Van Spronson's premeditated attack is a notable exception in the group's history, in which they've rarely participated in violence. But his attack and his farewell letter to another member, in which he wrote, "I am Antifa," a reference to anti-fascist activism, gained attention in particular from the right. Since Van Spronson's death, the number of active John Brown Gun Club chapters around the country has increased dramatically, based on dozens of new John Brown Gun Club Twitter accounts popping up. These clubs have no central leadership or formal organization, instead operating as a loosely connected network of independent cells. Many members wear a patch with a stylized cartoon of their group's namesake bordered by the words, "I don't argue with people John Brown would have shot." Chapters often range in size from around half a dozen members to more than 20, who are usually vetted through personal connections and in-person meetings before being welcomed in. Still, there are sometimes counter-protesters who show up to public events who aren't members of the clubs. Still, there are sometimes counter-protesters who show up to public events who aren't members of the clubs, which can lead to confusion. In fact, a few weeks after I left Texas, the discipline and coordination I saw at Tulips broke down in a dramatic face-off that was all over the local news at a drag event outside of a Fort Worth brewery on April 23rd. Three counter-protesters in a group of armed individuals that included John Brown Gun Club members were arrested. Closed circuit TV footage released by the Fort Worth Police Department shows one masked counter-protester approaching a group of unarmed right-wing protesters and pepper-spraying them in their faces. Police in body armor and carrying rifles of their own moved to arrest the person, who was charged with multiple accounts of assault, including one on a peace officer. Two other counter-protesters were then arrested. Quote, "I was very disappointed. A member of the LGBTQ community who was there tells me, if you're going to come fully armed, you have to be security. You can't get in fights. Your duty is to make sure the patrons are safe," end quote. What do you think about that? Is that a good idea to have left-wing armed militias showing up now at protests? Feel free to call in and give us your opinion. The phone number is 844-967-2789. You're tuned in to the Earl Ingram Show.